Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I wanted to kind of lead into the time of the year, and I'm not sure how many people, because I think everybody still kind of clicks along with the seasons and, you know, these traditions, you know, regarding the short days, the cold days in our lives and the long and hot days. But I believe the time of year is to act. I believe that this is the time in history that we have to act. I truly believe that the annals of history, which are being written on a daily basis, will record what we did. And I believe that future generations will be able to look back, and I'm hoping that they're going to look back and be thankful for what we did, because we have a responsibility. There's no doubt we were endowed with an awesome government. We were endowed with this concept of a nation that actually imbued individual liberty and individual sovereignty within the government itself. So when we look at the time of year, I don't think it's appropriate, I don't think it's wise to separate ourselves from the reality of what the heck's going on. We have to start, I'll just say, we have to take the paradigm. We have to take the commitment. And as a matter of fact, the word commitment reminds me of that little letter of that little communist that went to Mexico, or actually that student that went to Mexico and got mixed up with the communists and converted to communism, and how he committed his entire life to the communist cause. Folks, I'm telling you, that is the paradigm of most of the people when you see them out there. When you look at those three kids, or I should say those three men that Kyle, who's even more of a kid, took on, and you look at, you know, why were they doing this? They are wired. I can't emphasize this enough. And as a matter of fact, when I talked about government politics and ideologies, you know, I didn't get into this, but I'm going to do it right now. When you are on the far extreme of individual liberty, in other words, you truly believe that everybody must make a choice for themselves. They must learn for themselves and make a choice. And they have to live with the consequences of their choices. That's what liberty is. Those other folks that move towards and get to the extreme of subjugation or surrendering all. If you look, you start moving away from full liberty to where you surrender a couple liberties. This or that, that's not important. You know, it's just, I can do more with my life if we hire, you know, a police force to, you know, make sure everybody behaves. Well, that means you're giving up liberty. Every time you give your responsibility, and it is everybody's responsibility to enforce crime, it is everybody's responsibility to be engaged in all the facets of society. We can't cherry pick what parts we're going to be involved in or not. This is why we're going through all of this. But bottom line, every stage, every shift you make in surrendering a little bit more liberty, you finally move over to that point where you actually embrace this ideology that nobody should have a choice. Nobody should be able to, you know, let's say, deviate from what they believe is necessary, like vaccinations, like education, like indoctrination of ideologies in school and so forth. I mean, when you look at academia and you look at Christianity and academia within Christianity, over the years, over the centuries, academia was free until secularism came in. And all of a sudden, as soon as secularism came in, which was in the late 1800s, they started locking it down, and they finally got to a point where they were willing to go to trial and have the government dictate that communism and collectivism will be the agenda. Godlessness will be the curriculum that will be taught in school. So when you get to that end of the spectrum where you believe everybody must be subjugated, then those people are wired. They are hardwired and committed to doing whatever is necessary. They don't care about the laws. As a matter of fact, laws will change whimsically based on the needs. Oh, well, Mother Earth needs to be saved. So now they're going to throw all these laws of your property rights, your individual rights, they're going to throw those away and do whatever's necessary in saving Mother Earth. That is a religion, my friends. And that religion goes all the way back to even ancient Greece where they talked about these things. These are all old ideologies and philosophies that have been around for a long time. And I will tell you that the source of these is the same. It is Satan. The source of manipulating and inducing these different paradigms into society, it's Satan. Bottom line, because we are agents for ourselves, right? I mean, in all things we do, we willingly have to make agreements. We have to sign on the dotted line. I mean, we have to make our own decisions and we have to live with them. Well, as we start realizing what that takes and what that means, I think there's just some people that have this propensity to gravitate towards one end of the spectrum or another. There are people that ebb and flow or people that swing back and forth. But bottom line, you have to start understanding that those folks, like those three men in, you know, in the Kyle Rittenhouse or whatever's trial, I'm bad with names, so you know who I'm talking about, this young man that just got exonerated of all his charges. The fact is that those men didn't care. They were willing to kill Kyle. They're willing to do whatever they had to, whatever they believed they could get away with. If they caught that they could, if they thought they could get away with Kyle, that's probably why one of them went for the gun. The fact is, folks, you have to start accepting the fact that there are people that are absolute enemies of your thought, your belief in liberty, your belief in individual choice and individual sovereignty. There are people that say, no, you do not deserve liberty or sovereignty. No person does. We can't afford it. Our society must and cannot function that way. We have to have 100% compliance. Now, I myself am a person that believes in 100% compliance to the Constitution. We've created the law of the land, and we've created this framework of government under this Constitution. And in essence, what we have to do is we have to make sure that people are abiding by that and not. The reason all of our problems come from our politicians and public servants who choose not to follow this. I had a great conversation. I forget who it was, but the bottom line is when we were talking about people that are in most of you don't know about the corporations, because this show is not about the sovereign citizen movement or about the focus on all of these unconstitutional government corporations that have been created. Well, the fact of the matter is it's all unconstitutional. They don't have the power to do that. They never had the power to create these corporations, to fleece America, and actually to move us under subjugation so that we no longer have our liberties. This is all a facade. Everything, but that's just only one part of it. All these other things that they do, such as this abortion, all these other things, they're all facades. They're all unconstitutional features or facets that they have created out of thin air. They've never had the authority to do any of these things. So the point is that when we elect, and this is, I wish I could remember who I was speaking to over the past couple of days, but when we elect somebody, surely they have a choice of abiding by the Constitution and supporting the Constitution and doing the best they can for their constituents, you know, their voters. But there are those who, when they step in, they learn about the corporate ways and corporate governance, and they willingly go to that side, and they never look back at the Constitution. Those folks are not your public servants. Those folks have actually violated the essence of the supreme law of the land. And it seems like there's a monopoly on that. Now, this has been done. These corporations were done a long, long time ago, over a century ago. But most people, as they were being elected, they never knew about this stuff. And for the most part, they kept this a good secret. Only a few people were entrusted. The only reason they're out of the closet today is because they believe they're in a position. They believe they're in a position that actually, you know, enables them, and they believe that you can't do anything about it. Well, that's what reclaiming the republic is all about, my friends. So when we come back, I'll go through the obligatories. I'll praise those friends and patriots that I believe we need to be supporting. And hopefully that would be you too. Reach out and let us know. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
As during the break, I was thinking, you know, I kind of started off with, now's the time of year. Now is the time. I was just trying to think of what's the best way to articulate these deep-seated feelings. Because what I want to do is kind of create that chant, or I should say a mantra, an opening line, something like, now is the time to grow our ranks. And we need to continue to grow our ranks. I look at all of the patriotic organizations, and I would say that, you know, they're all suffering. They don't have enough people. But what would happen, my friends, if all of a sudden everybody put aside their boundaries of their organization and looked beyond their organization and found all of these other people, regardless of what their focus is, and actually started uniting. We will find, and you will find, that you may be in an organization like the Republican Party that is actually not founded and or centered, nor even cares about centering on the Constitution. More importantly, nor do they care about uniting with all who do. We can look at other organizations. I like picking on the John Birch Society, so let's go there. I mean, most of John Birch's all claim that they're, you know, huge supporters. They all say we all have to unite, but do they put down their boundaries and their walls and actually start working with all the other organizations? How many John Birchers? Now, there are, don't get me wrong, there are individual John Birchers, but the leadership is always join us, join us, join us. And you know what? That bird has to die. Because that bird is killing us. The bird of all of these different organizations that are saying, you got to join us. No, we need to, now's the time to be uniting. All who have joined you need to unite with everybody on the Constitution and reclaim this republic now before it's too late. So I'm trying to think. So, all right, soliciting your thoughts, soliciting what would be the best way to articulate that so that instead of saying, welcome back, I can actually say, now's the time, folks, to build the ranks and this is what we're going to learn today or something like that. And I know that doesn't really speak to that. What we want to do is we want to go down this path of, you know, getting everybody energized and people have to be, you have to have a buy-in. You actually have to believe that this is something we have to do. You know, and I can't emphasize enough the importance of the unorganized militia. You know, the unorganized militia was so ambiguous that Congress just kind of created it and left it alone because they realized that, you know, who's going to do something with that? Well, us patriots. Most people want to know, well, what can we do? How can we, you know, how can we be vigilant as citizens? Well, we have to unite. What, how and where do we unite? And so this is where you go, hey, John Bircher, are you a member of the unorganized militia? And are you actively involved in your county's unorganized militia? There you go. There you go. Now, one of the things I've told people, because people go, why aren't you, GR, involved? Well, you know, it doesn't take much for somebody to turn on someone, right? I mean, we are friends. Nine times out of ten, people that get exposed, and I've seen this so many times, where all of a sudden something happens, where somebody's feelings get hurt. Next thing you know, that person's being doxed. That person's being called out. That person's being, you know, I'll just say, I guess doxed is the best way of saying it, but you can't trust people. You have to have your limitations because bottom line, you may upset somebody and next thing you know, they're going to out you and, you know, to your enemies or what have you. Now, the day when we actually have organizations that are uniting and working together in both building their local community, getting and moving their state, along with working with these dark red states, moving towards this republic review and reclaiming the republic, then I think we, you know, GR will be doxed, or GR will dox himself. It doesn't matter at that point, right? It shouldn't. It shouldn't matter at all. As you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and evidence-based solutions. We will be on Rumble tomorrow, and so just want to remind you that, you know, you may want to kind of tune in. We're going to be going through the issues, and I didn't get anything done on them. Forgive me. I've just been wasting my time, twiddling my thumbs, watching the grass grow in the middle of winter, right? Anyway. Financial Fortitude, or Fortitude Financial Coaching. I don't know why I mix things up. I think I'm part dyslexic. But anywho, Fortitude Financial Coaching will help you get the discipline you need in becoming financially successful like you can't believe. It's just like doing anything, becoming the great in anything, whether it is sports, whether it is, you know, some game, whether it is engineering, whatever it is that you really love doing, then you have to become disciplined. And Fortitude Financial Coaching with Gary Smith, he will help you discipline yourself so that you can become successful. But it really requires your commitment to actually doing what you need to do, like weight loss, whatever those things are. It requires discipline, right? Have you ever seen an undisciplined, you know, person on a diet? I mean, that means that they're not following their diet. And well, what's the point in being on a diet? What's the point in having a budget if you're not going to be disciplined in living by that budget, and especially having, you know, a good budget and a good financial budget so that you're not floating and paying interest? One of the things I learned a long time ago is a wise man earns interest and a fool pays it. Are you floating your credit cards? Are you paying interest on credit cards and your interest and fees, what have you? If you are, I'm sorry, you fall into that fool category. You have to pay off your credit cards and never allow the credit card company to earn a penny of interest. You got to get those payments made. And as a matter of fact, I know it's almost hard to impossible to not have a credit card. It really is, because most people don't take checks. And most people, they just can't live on carrying cash and paying cash for everything. It becomes very difficult in doing that. So just have to understand that you have to become disciplined. Don't forget that there's free constitutional classes at theconstitutioneducation.us. Again, constitutioneducation.us. That's Keith Borders, my friend, and an educator, a patriot, and a better man than I. Timbernation.com, if you're looking for good hardwood furnishings, go there. Check them out. And RadioDustCovers.com, if you're looking to protect your electronics and so forth. And more importantly, I sometimes forget these guys, but I shouldn't, because they offer some services that I think every patriot organization needs. AdLocal.com. Go to AdLocal and go see Benjamin Carr, and he will be able to get you set up with your domain or whatever services you need. Anyway, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. We will get back to the importance of definitizing the Constitution, what we have to do and what that means, kind of thing. But let me get into where I left off. So we kind of covered, and I did a go back at the very beginning of the show, talking about ideologies. So we covered the government, politics, ideologies, and how this kind of all really started, how that shift, a societal shift in Western society began based on the Magna Carta. I mean, when most people look at it, you know, we are not a part of the British society and British government. We have become our own independent, but we broke away from that British government. When you look at all of the other European and governments of the nation, when it comes to individual liberty and individual sovereignty, there was something unique about what happened in Britain. One of the things I find is interesting is that out of all of the people in the world during the Roman Empire had a problem trying to enslave Brits, going, you know, basically getting their ship, going all the way up there, and then capturing these people that were just, I mean, these people were willing to die for, to not be a slave. I mean, there, it was just really hard to break them. And so it's interesting. It's not that they didn't have British slaves, and actually they had a lot of people that joined the Roman, you know, I will say the ranks of the Roman war machine, but it was never, Britain and the British Isles was never conquered and claimed as a part of the Roman Empire. I mean, it fell under the Roman Empire, but it wasn't represented. It was unique. And I believe that when we look at the people that settled there, and there, it goes back to that old family paradigm of the Saxon brothers. If you look at what they were doing and why they, you know, were such troublesome slaves, it kind of gives you a good understanding. And if you look at today, how good slaves the Brits have become to the tyranny and a socialistic communist government, I think that they lost the best part of them coming to America. So anyway, when we come back, we're going to get into the resolutions and the process and so forth.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so actually where we left off, we just kind of went into the Constitution as we looked at the evolution of government in America, because we started off with these colonies. And as a matter of fact, I didn't mention this, but if you're familiar with the history of New York, New York was not a British colony. No, actually, New York was a Dutch colony. It was, the original name for New York was New Amsterdam. And so when we look at the different colonies, it was kind of unique that New York was right there in the middle, right? And, you know, obviously they were a little bit late coming to the game, but they sure got themselves a pretty interesting port area with the Hudson and so forth. And I'll just say this, that it didn't take long for those bothersome Brits to find themselves in that colony of Dutch and migrate it, and actually, without conquering it, without creating a war, they basically moved the Dutch colony in underneath the British Empire. So that was a form of invasion and kind of a takeover, even though that wasn't maybe the original design. It wasn't like, you know, the Brits came to the war table with this and unrolled the strategy and map that we got to take over this. At least I've never read anything about that with history, but it eventually became the obvious thing to talk about, or the obvious thing to do, you know, is to kind of take over that. Now, Spain had Florida. But anyway, so we looked at the players. We looked at, you know, how they revolted, the Articles of Confederation, and the importance of how the Constitution had to be formed. And so as we look at the Constitution and moving forward, so the Constitution got ratified. Now, it's interesting that there were some states that ratified the Constitution with a rubber stamp. They didn't even debate it. There were hardly anybody there. I mean, if there was an anti-federalist presence, it was so insignificant that they couldn't create this, you know, do we need to debate this or not? Delaware, it was a slam dunk. And Georgia, another slam dunk. When we start looking at, you know, Virginia, Pennsylvania, where it was debated, like as I point to these states that had the most heated debates, they were the big players. These were the players that had cabals. These were the states that, you know, not that Rhode Island didn't have a cabal. They refused, the state, almost in its entirety, chose not to even become a part of the union until they realized that if they didn't, they may not exist anymore, because they were just a little speed bump. If you really look at Rhode Island and, you know, where they are, what they are, they're not even an island. But the point is that when you look at what was inevitable, they ended up coming into the union. And it was a paradigm shift for them, because they were so sovereign that they were pretty used to getting away with whatever they wanted to do government-wise. Well, even though they still had that ability, they did have to start cooperating. And I'm not sure if there have been very many, because I don't think so. At the top of my head, I can't think of really any, you know, landmark cases that went after Rhode Island because they were failing to behave. But for the most part, going back to the big players, where the cabals, these big powerhouses actually existed, and they wanted to protect these powerhouses. And so Patrick Henry, George Mason, or Clinton, Governor Clinton of New York, these men did not want to see their states become, and they called it, you know, subjugated. They talked about this whole new government. This is going to be the worst thing for us. And the fact of the matter is, it was very limited and defined powers that the federal government had any supremacy over the states at all. Really, when we look at it, when we look today at what constitutional powers the federal government really has, and oh, by the way, don't confuse powers with roles and responsibilities. When you go through the Constitution, there are what we call enumerated powers, and then there are roles and responsibilities, not powers. Like, you know, the ability or the responsibility of ensuring that there's a standard date for federal elections, that type of stuff. That's not a power. That is a responsibility. But anyway, as we start looking at, you know, this galvanized Constitution and these states, and here's the thing I like pointing out, because a lot of people, you know, talk about this anti-federalist bent and how the anti-federalists were, you know, out there leading the charge against this Constitution. You have to keep in mind that when we look at the federal government and we look at the states and the anti-federalist argument that the states needed to have a Bill of Rights, right? Because their primary arguments against the Constitution were what? Needed a Bill of Rights. Well, Continental Congress didn't have a Bill of Rights. Why is all of a sudden did a Bill of Rights to this enumerated government need to be created? Why were they taking this stand? Well, because they saw that this thing had power. Yeah, but they were enumerated powers. They weren't general powers. And as it went through the argument in the ratification debates, it was clearly articulated that you don't need a Bill of Rights when you've enumerated. In other words, they can only exercise this power. This goes into the paradigm of powers of attorney. This was a specified power of attorney. This was not a general power of attorney where the general government could do anything and everything. Everybody kept on looking at it and going, oh boy, you know, you're giving them these powers. But actually, you're not giving them general powers. You're only giving them specific delegated powers. And as a matter of fact, it was stated several times in different states that these powers were well denned. They were well caged. It's not like there was any way the federal government was going to be able to get outside these cages. Well, the Bill of Rights, which we're coming up on this on, I think Wednesday is the Bill of Rights Day. The Bill of Rights became more problematic for the Constitution and for Americans to understand the Constitution today and even back then than not having the Bill of Rights. Now, there's two sides of the fence I'm on. Now, I'm standing on one side of the fence right now and stating that the Bill of Rights has probably done more damage to the mind model or to the paradigm of Americans because we look at what rights we have and we completely forget that the federal government doesn't have any enumerated powers over, one, those rights, or over anything else other than those that are enumerated, those that are listed. When I say enumerated, that means listed in the Constitution. And so when we look at the Constitution and the enumerated powers, is there any enumerated power for religion? Is there any enumerated power for life? Is there any enumerated power for energy, education, housing, labor? I could go on, and environment, on and on and on and on. The federal government was limited, especially when we look today at all the things the government can be. No way. No way do they have the authority to do all of these things. And as a matter of fact, we have to make the presumption that everybody is idiots, and then we have to prove that either they're an idiot or they're culpable in committing treason, such as Biden, you know, Obama, Clinton's, and all of these folks. Now, I think that we will find characters that have actually committed treason. But I believe there are some people that are just, they're really that clueless. They're really that stupid that they just don't know. They never learned, nor did they care. They accepted their role in being told what to do. Biden may be just that guy. Anyway, so as we look at the Bill of Rights and the damage it did, because most people only cared about the right to bear arms, they only cared about, you know, protection from, you know, search and seizure, those things that are listed. But you got to remember, every single one of those things, almost every single one of those things, those individual rights within the Bill of Rights, was not injected into any enumerated power. In other words, it's almost like saying, okay, you can only do these things, but just if you were thinking you can't do this, 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 I mean, why don't we just say you can't, you know, dictate hats, you can't dictate fashion, you can't why? Why would we do that? As Mr. Iredell stated, you could go on and on and on, and you still never come up with a comprehensive list of the things you didn't want him to do. It was brilliant what the Lord did in saying these are the only things that they can do. And it took us all this time to figure this out, because it wasn't until yours truly in really reading and in going through the documents of recognizing, and actually through inspiration of saying, you know, the Constitution is a compact, we should audit it. But anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as we were going into break, I just kind of pointed out these nice-to-know little things that, you know, when they were creating this Constitution, these enumerated powers, it wasn't just enumerated powers. It was enumerated properties, too, because they realized that allowing the federal government to possess any kind of land that they wanted to would allow them to oppress the people. Land, in the framers' perspective, was the true source of riches, because bottom line, your food, your sustenance, everything came from the land. So they wanted to make sure that the federal government couldn't be a holder of land. Now, they did allow, it wasn't considered a power, but in Article 4, they did allow the federal government the ability to own and, or actually not own, but be the custodian for territories for the Union. And these territories were not designed to actually become a part of the United States government as a body of places to live. And when we look at places like Puerto Rico should have become a state a long time ago. As a matter of fact, the federal government should have actually given them a time frame and said, bottom line, if you don't have your population speaking English, using our currency, using our banking system, using blah, 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 you know, a part of our legal system, invoking common law and all of those things, then we're going to cut the cord. Why is it that we continue to actually pour out, you know, all of these things that the federal government doesn't even have the authority to do? They're not supposed to become the nannies of territories. Territories are designed to become a part of the states. The intent of it, the only intent for anything to become a territory is to transition it into its state, its own statehood. Now, when we created Hawaii, I believe it created some problems. And I actually had this conversation on Saturday with a Constitution Party member, a leader, not just a member, but a leader. And so my point is this, is that when we allowed Hawaii to come into the Union, we allowed it, because when we realized that any state can come into the Union,
that, you know, we look at that state and say, okay, that state is, you know, deserving under our government, two senators and a basic representative. When we look at the islands of the world, like Hawaii, Hawaii should have been in this, the state that should have been created when we created Hawaii was not Hawaii, but the islands of the Pacific. Because when we start adding islands of the Pacific into like the territories of Guam, Samoa, and so forth, those should actually become counties to the state of the islands of the Pacific. Now, Honolulu being the capital of that state, and that each island would have its own seat of government. And so this is where the understanding the sub-elements of government and the framework that they, you know, in creating this kind of a republic that was, when we look at the national government was created as a server of the states, the union. The same thing exists within the states, that the states are actually made up of counties, a sub-element of that government. And the state government should be, it shouldn't be the all, you know, everything under the sun. It should be basically the servant of the counties. We created a distributive government, allowing the government that affects people the most to be closest to the people. You shouldn't have to travel to your state capital to actually, you know, have conversations about how you're going to do work, your traffic, and so forth. Now, the state government, unlike the federal government, should have general, or not general power, but it should have, you know, more enumerated powers to allow it to create the standards for education, for transportation, so forth and so on, so that the transportation within the state will, you know, all be copacetic, where you don't have, you know, backwards thinking people in one county dictating, you know, bad ideas into traffic and so forth. But anyway, as we start looking, once again, when we look at the Constitution and the federal government and its enumerated powers, there is one mechanism and only one mechanism to change and or modify a process, a role, or a responsibility, or a power. When I say a process, when we look at the process of the Electoral College, is that a power? No. That is a responsibility. So when the federal government, you know, executes this, and when the states, there's this co-responsibility between the states and federal government, that's not a power. That's a responsibility. When it comes to, you know, filling seats of emissaries, that would be a process and or a role, not a power. You know, same thing with filling your court judges and so forth. But anyway, let me get back to this, because I'm trying to build up to what they did and how they started moving forward, because they were pretty quick out the gate after, you know, creating the Bill of Rights. They were also pretty quick out the gate in amending the Constitution for the 11th Amendment, and then again for the 12th Amendment, and again for the 13th Amendment in 1812. Now, Keith and I have to have that conversation, so I'm not going to get into the details, because I love Keith for the fact that he digs up all the details, and because a lot of these things, I don't have time. I'm trying to teach people, you know, how and what we have to do to save. So I don't have time to actually research everything else. So this is where this relationship with Keith is really important to me. So anywho, going back to, you know, this enumerated constitution, these enumerated roles and these enumerated responsibilities and enumerated property, ownership of property, control of land and buildings. It was very clear that the general government did not have the ability to make and assume any changes at all. And just to be crystal clear here. Anytime the general government wanted to make a minute change to the Electoral College, a minute change to powers being construed or jurisdiction being construed for the 11th Amendment, that change required the party's buy-in. Because, again, the federal government was not a sovereign over itself. The sovereign over the federal government were the states. The states are the parents. The federal government is the child. That's the relationship you need to keep in context when we talk about states and the federal government. So anyway, as we move forward, you know, they had these things like the Assumption Act. And Madison's biggest mistake was he allowed Jefferson to tie his hands. I believe that had Madison not been tempted, or because of his personal relationship with Jefferson, so this, you know, I know some people that I know lots of people that have this huge love for Jefferson, and he was a great guy, but he had some weaknesses, and one of his biggest weaknesses was his desire to spend and his desire to possess and, you know, and have things. He had a significant desire to, I don't want to say ingratiate, but I mean, look at all the books he bought. He spent more and more money. If you look at what he inherited from his parents, and if you look at what he had, and had he actually invested and been industrious like Washington or others, he would have grown the Monticello value and estate into something that was, you know, incredible. He had all the potential in doing that. He was a smart enough man to do that. But what ended up happening is he ended up spending, and the day he died, they foreclosed on his estate. I mean, everything went to its debtors. It took a while for the state of Virginia to finally come back and say, you know what, we're going to buy all of this because this is historical. We need to preserve this. But I just want you to understand that Jefferson, when he heard about the opportunity of being able to buy land in the Washington, or I should say the District of Columbia, that they were going to create in this secret deal between Jefferson, Madison, and Hamilton. I think he really regretted those days. I think he looks back possibly and goes, you know what? We should have stopped the Assumption Act. We should never have allowed that to happen. And so because they went forward in assuming these loans and assuming this banking capability, the only way to clean up the banking capability, the banking system, is for the states to actually say, you know what? You can't do that. We never authorized you to do that. And back in 1792, you never came to us with an amendment. Had they done that, then I believe we would be looking at a different constitutional republic today. Had we actually stepped up and stepped in. But we still have the chance to fix all of this with Republic Review. Now, we're going to move into the actual resolutions and kind of wrap this up in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.